Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jan, who is here to speak with us about her experience of stewarding a sitting group. Welcome, Jan.
Hi, Jan. Thank you.
Hey. So if one were to go to the website and look up sitting groups, you'd find that there are a number of them around the country. And
Yeah. You
are one of the folks who has stewarded that opportunity, someone who offers to your local Sangha the opportunity to come and sit weekly.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could tell us. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, it sounded so wonderful when you said that, just that we have locations all over the country. It's just so amazing.
Yeah. It is so amazing. And, you know, we live in an age where it's not difficult to find a meditation group.
It's
definitely caught on. But it's not, when you start practicing with this particular Sangha in this particular way, my experience, and I hear this from people all the time, it's such a great gift to have a sitting group with this particular Sangha if you're lucky enough to have that in your local area.
Yeah, well, that's certainly how I feel. And as I've, at times, visited other groups, it's a privileged environment, it seems, that
exactly.
Makes such a huge difference. And, there's nothing wrong with other ways, but when you've experienced a privileged environment, it's my heart just wants to go there and be there. So glad. Well, that's why we're in this practice.
Yeah. So what's that been like for you over the years as you've stewarded that opportunity?
Well, you know, it's interesting because our sitting group is somewhat one of the newer groups. I guess we've been going all over 2 years. And I guess I was thinking back, knowing we were going to be talking about when I just decided, you know, we need I want to do this. I want to have a local group. Is a woman I had met involved with another meditation group. She goes, why don't you offer, you know, why don't you start a group in your town? And I thought, yes. Mm. It just there was no hesitation.
Why don't I?
Well, it was like the time was right. And all it took was someone asking. And it just went from there. And I just remember the excitement of when the monastery responded that, yes, it's okay to, you know, to begin. And, you know, there's a whole process to it. But just the thrill of that. And for me, it's been a terrific training process because everything that I do that has anything related to the sitting group has to be done from a place of practice. I mean, it's all process, but it's to honor. I mean, how can by just doing it, I represent practice, as we all do, but particularly with the sitting group, it seems like everything has to be considered and done with care. And I think that's what I love about it. It's been terrific training for me at every level, whether it's just setting up the cushions before group or sending out an email. Everything has I want to do it with care. It's part of the practice.
You want it to represent practice. And, you know, Jan, I was thinking about it today, too, and looking at how, from what you're describing, every part of it is meditation.
Every piece of
stewarding the group is meditation. You know, we talk at the monastery that everything we do at the monastery is meditation. Walking meditation, working meditation, you know, mindful eating. We're encouraged to be in the mind of meditation as we're eating. And that sitting meditation is really the training ground for all of it.
Yeah, and so what came to mind as you said that is, so here I am, you know, scheduling or setting up for or whatever it is for the sitting meditation in our location, and so it becomes a meditation. It needs to be be done in a way that honors the practice. And I guess what was also coming to mind is just what a privilege it is to be able to offer it. I mean, when you've gotten so much from something in your life, that was part of the yes response, I know, is just when you've gotten so much, your life has been so changed in the most wonderful ways, or exposed to nature has you know, that you just want that to be available for whoever is interested.
So I wonder if you could say more about that. So what you see as the power of, in particular, sitting meditation has been for you in your practice over time.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind, it's just the grounding. It's the basis for all other life meditation. So I practice, you know, years ago started practicing sitting, and then am invited to do working meditation or walking meditation. And we begin to see, I began to see that you know, the whole, it's an invitation to take that process, that meditative state of mind into life and to do everything from there. Not that, you know, not to say that we do it all the time, but it's what allows us to see that that's a possibility and to practice doing it.
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, so few people, I think a lot of people when they hear, you know, oh, meditation, oh, God, please don't make me. because missing the, and it's no wonder, right? I mean, of course, ego is going to resist it like crazy, because to have the privilege to sit down, in our case, in our practice, we meditate for 30-minute sessions when we're doing formal meditation together as a Sangha. The privilege to sit down for 30 minutes in complete silence and stillness and to simply watch what goes on, watch the process that happens. I mean, almost no one gives themselves that luxury, the space to do that.
Yeah, and a couple of things came to mind as you said it, just to be able to honor life in that way, that 30 minutes that you pointed to.
Yes.
And also to do it with other people, there's a strength in that.
Definitely.
The words aren't coming to mind, but sort of just a support to one another that Sangha provides, and just the richness of that, of sitting with other people, whether it's in a sitting group or virtual meditation that's now offered. I think there's just that connection that encourages, at least it encourages me, to want to do more, to just continue to, because I feel supported. I feel like part of all that's going on.
Yes, it is so true, really well put. Because, again, you know, I'm going to take 30 minutes out of what for everyone is a busy life, right? I mean, we all live incredibly busy lives. And I'm going to sit down and do nothing for 30 minutes when I'm awake? I don't think so, you know?
Yeah.
So if I'm at home, conditioning is going to do everything it can to keep me from that cushion. But how easy it would be. So there I am on the cushion and the phone rings. Or I suddenly think of something. Or, oh, my God, I forgot to. And how easy it would be to just pop up and go do the whatever. But when we've made that commitment, even I suspect in the virtual meditation groups, I suspect it has the same impact. But certainly when someone has driven, you know, to come, say, join your group for the evening, you're not going to do that. You know, you're not going to get up and get in your car and drive home and go do the thing. You've made this commitment. You're going to sit there and you're going to do it. And the great benefit that we'll get to see the process, instead of being driven by the process, we get to see the process, and that gives us so much information about how suffering is caused.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think that's part of the support of sitting together. We've made the commitment. We're doing it together. And it each time we do it, it's strengthening that that faith that is building, that of what... Yeah. Of what's true, of what we really are, of what's true in life, and what is what is conditioned. There's nothing like it.
That's a very nice image. So when we're sitting in meditation, we're getting to experience what we are. It's a great gift to us. It's a great gift to all, as you pointed at a little bit earlier.
It certainly feels that way from my experience that... Sherry and many others have talked in the Sangha have talked about just that. We do what we do, our meditation, it becomes more, maybe at the beginning, we're doing it for ourselves, we may be in a suffering place, But as we go through the process and learn and experience more and more, I think we all get we get to see that the effect it has on the world. I mean, whether it be in our local community or anywhere else, it's not just us.
No. And that is such a pivotal place in practice, isn't it? I mean, a great gift to the human, to the person, when we get it that this isn't just for me, because then it takes on such a sort of supportive, reinforcing loop, if you will. You know, then I'm much more likely to keep my commitment and to receive the benefits of the commitment, which makes me want to keep the commitment, which I receive more benefits of it, and so on. You know, we really, it just kind of snowballs in the away from suffering direction. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's such a different place. What was coming to mind is that it's such a different place than conditioning saying, this is your responsibility for the world. You know, you need to blah, blah, blah. It's such a different place than that, because it comes from, I just want to say, if it comes from the heart, that, you know, what's best here is best for the world. And we get to know that place. We get more and more familiar, or as I guess the language that's been used recently is just calibrating to life. And that it's just, what could be more exciting? What could be more fun?
Truly, what could be more fun? I know people don't often associate, I project the word fun with meditation, but it truly is. And, you know, just one more thing I thought of, you were saying that, Dan, that it points at how, you know, so we introduce you and say, here's Jan who's stewarding this sitting group, and that's absolutely the case. And we could say everyone who comes to the sitting group is stewarding the sitting group. Truly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess what I would add on top of that is, you know, I mentioned it's a privilege to be able to offer it. But, you know, to me, I get at least as much out of the experience of offering it. I project than those that come to sit, because, you know, there's just so much shared.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Yep. Well, thank you so much for being on the Good News Meditation this afternoon.
Thank you, Jen.
All right. Take
good
care,
good
Jen.
Show. Good night.
Good night. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jan. And good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great
that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Good to hear yours. Yeah, it has been a while, hasn't it, since we've connected. That's true. I must say I forgot that. I forgot I've been gone. Have you been gone or just me?
Well, I think we were both here, each in our own places.
I see. That's a very good point.
Present and attentive, we hope.
Yeah, wherever we were here. Well done. Yeah, that was fun. I like the good news meditation. Good news update meditation. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Everything is meditation, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And we're very blessed.
So true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what's going on? Anything?
Yes, there's a new email class coming up.
I've heard that rumor.
Yes, Sex and Money. And it's a fun exploration of spirituality and taboos.
Yes, and you know, there's another element to it. There are two other elements that I want to mention since you brought it up. One is it's going to be very connected to strong emotion. I don't know if people are reading that or if we're saying that or whatever, but that's one of the pieces of it that I'm most excited about, is that there's so much emotion tied up in these subjects, and that's going to be a big part of what we're looking at in the class. And the other thing that I want to underline is it's the reason that we came up with this topic was that we hoped that it would be something that new people new to practice would like to explore with us. Now, it's true that we try to make every email class for everybody, whether they've been doing practice for a long time or not, but we particularly wanted to make this one one where we would be endeavoring to speak to people at every level of practice. And so that's just an encouragement. If people are new and they think, well, an email class, or sometimes, you know, if somebody's done an email class and they think, oh, I'm so in over my head, I promise to do everything I can to make this class relevant for everybody. So if people are really old timers, then, you know, as we're fond of pointing out, as Suzuki Roshi taught us well, you know, repetition, it's very good for our practice. We get to look at the same things over and over and over and hear the same things over and over and over until finally they become a part of us inside the marrow of the bones, as we like to say in Zen. And so if people are fairly new, we're going to make sure that we frame things and phrase things in such a way that clarity is offered. And so that's my commitment for this class. I'm excited about doing it.
Excellent. That sounds great. And it seems to me that these particular pieces of content are very tangible. They're very real for people.
Yes.
And I think that makes them more accessible also.
Yes. Yeah, this is not something that's on the periphery of most people's lives. You know, one or both of these issues is usually a pretty big deal for those of us who are conditioned humans, you know, which was most of us. So, yeah.
Yes, yes. And there are only a couple of slots left in the last retreat of In This Way, I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's Labor Day weekend, right?
Is that Labor Day? Last weekend in
August? Yeah, I think it starts right the Monday of Labor Day weekend, I think. I'm not sure,
okay.
Anyway.
Great.
But they can go to the schedule, huh? We know it's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, so we know that.
Yes, and we know it's August 31st to September 4th.
Yeah, so see there.
So
that's good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And for these and all other opportunities, of which there are many, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make guest show by pressing *6 and then 1. And a reminder to keep it to one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Thanks,
so
Michael.
So here we go. You're
all
welcome.
Right.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Holly from Australia.
My goodness.
Hi.
Good
Can
to
you hear me
your
okay?
voice. Yes, beautifully. What do you have to?
I'm good. I'm cold. I'm good, though. Yeah.
That's right. I remember how that works now. You're wintering.
Yeah, I was listening
there.
To a recent radio show, and you guys were saying how hot it is. I was like, what? What's heat?
Well, you know, you're always welcome to winter with us in the summer here.
Sounds dreamy. So, I'm good. I'm kind of working with something, and I don't really know how to work with it because it's not new, but I've not really seen it until now. And I don't know how to actually do recording and listening with it either. I'm a bit baffled, so I thought I should ring. And also the content is a bit embarrassing. Not like it's really personal, but it's a little bit shameful. Well, no, there you go. There's some fodder as well, but I feel like if I can speak about it on the show, then, I don't know, I'll just tell you what's going on.
Yes.
So last time I rang in, I was sort of, this is like months ago, I was kind of dealing with the issue around being 39 and single and maybe never having children and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of got to a really good place of acceptance with that. that, you know, I could be okay with that or without that, and either way it's up to me. And it was just quite revolutionary and exciting. And a couple of months I met this really great guy. And I'm not pregnant or anything. I'm not going into that territory. But he's actually someone, like, I've been in and out of relationships for years with men who are really just pretty show ponies and not getting the commitment I kind of want, and, you know, I've been doing a lot of work on myself, and this guy's really different. He's really ordinary in a really lovely way. He's fun. He's mature. He's 47. He's just different to anything I've known with men, and he's just really present with me, and we also sit together because he's a practice. So it's just great. But I'm hitting a wall with myself because he isn't good looking, and I've always gone out with really good looking guys. If they're not good, really good looking, they're really popular, and I think that's also been a part of me, that I need to be really good looking, because the family society I grew up in was all very much about your looks. You know, being good looking or being with someone good looking is your worth, and this guy is obviously aging, even though actually I am as well, and he's got, you know, heaps of wrinkles and bad skin, and he's really lanky, and there's parts I feel quite magnetically attracted to him, but I'm sitting with him and I'm picking him apart in my head, and I'm horrified at what I'm doing, because I always thought that for a long time I'm like, I just want to go out with someone who's just a great person and looks don't matter, and suddenly they're just feeling really important to me, and I'm freaking out because I don't want to actually pick someone apart in my head or be in aversion, because he's not, like, I notice even when we go out, I'm thinking, yeah, like, I want to be walking down the street with one of these. No, he's not, but he's just great, and I'm just, it's really hard not to go into total self-hate about it too, because it's just so wrong, but I'm feeling this, and I feel quite stuck because I don't know how to navigate, and because I'm so horrified. But I mean, just saying, it's kind of funny because it's so pointless, but it's just really there.
Well, let me ask you this, Holly. How much of your life has been focused on you being picked apart by you, based on the standard you are meeting or not meeting about looks? Physical,
yeah,
attractiveness.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always been there. And also, I've just got a lot of attention at times if I'm looking great, and people always say how young I look for my age. And, you know, it is quite a thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, there's been a lot of self-criticism in that, too.
Yeah. And you know, in your family that's going on, right? In their
family,
people are picking each other apart, and strangers, of course, but each other as well, right? So you walk into a room with your family, the people that you grew up with, and they're just scrutinizing you from head to foot, seeing where you're not meeting the standard.
Well, it's also like people who...
If you are, it's fine, but the point is nobody's looking for how you're meeting the standard. They're looking for how you're not meeting the standard.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of emphasis that if someone's good-looking, they've somehow achieved something.
And,
like, my mom will point out, like, they're so beautiful. And I get really annoyed, when people do it now. Like there's someone sort of have achieved something because they're really good looking. It's just like, what the hell is that? I get really angry.
Right. Well, or with anything. Somebody is really proud of the fact that they're intelligent. Whoa, when did you make that decision? Right? And
yet
ego wants to take credit for all of these things as if it had something to do with them, right? So my point in asking you about that for yourself is just to indicate that why would you be any different with him than you've been with yourself? right? You've been picked apart in your head all your life.
Yes.
Of course you're going to pick him apart.
Right.
You probably, perhaps, I don't know, you can look and see if this is true, you've been attracted to attractive men because you didn't actually need to do that with them, so all of the focus could be on picking you apart.
Probably, because when I'm going out with these show ponies, I just get really self-conscious about my own appearances to keep up with them. Whereas with this guy, I just can totally be myself, and I don't feel like I need to, I don't pick myself apart with him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you pick him apart. Now, so that's restful, right? So you've got a lifetime of being picked apart because you're being compared to the beautiful people. And even though you're attractive, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sherry. I just cut out for 5 seconds there, and I don't know why, but I'm glad. Could you say that, what you just said again? Because I just didn't get it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, but I know the direction I want to go in. So all of your life, you have been the focus of picked apart, right? And sure, other people, family members, and people in general.
Oh, yeah, society, my school.
The point is, it's all about you and how you compare and how you measure up. Now, you don't have to do that. You can relax, finally, and just be yourself. What do you think conditioning is going to say? Oh, good for you, Holly. Now you can just let go of all that old self-hate and just settle down and be happy. No. Mm. Now the focus is just going to go to him. So pick him apart.
Yeah. My God, this is so great because it's just making, this is it. It makes so much sense. Like the clouds have parted.
Yes. So here's the deal. And this is the, you know, and you're not alone in this, okay? I mean, this is really standard karmic conditioning relationship stuff, okay? So what you have a chance to do now is to drop it in you and drop it in him. Drop it about you and drop it about him. But the trick of it is going to be to realize that all that stuff is karmic conditioning, self-hate. It's not you.
Right.
So instead of believing that you're inside your mind picking him apart, you can now watch how karmic conditioning self-hate is in your mind picking him apart. Yeah? So you can see it as an alien force. It's always been an alien force, but you didn't see it that way.
Right. Okay, yeah, because I'm still so identified with it because it's just always been a part of my program since I was quite young.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
But it was just as alien in your being as it is now, when the content was you, as it is now with the content being him. So the next thing that's fun about it, okay, the next piece that's fun, is to follow the projections back. Okay? Follow the projections back to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate because it's projecting.
So meaning that if I'm picking him apart in my mind, I see how I'm picking myself apart?
No, you get to see how, let's just say ego for shorthand or self-hate, picks you apart and is now picking him apart. And it's projecting. He's really unattractive. Ego, self-hate, is really unattractive.
Oh.
Okay? He's old.
Right.
It's old.
Right.
It's way older than all of us. Okay. He's just ego.
Okay.
That. Okay?
Right.
Same with you. When it turns on you, which it will. Okay, and you just take the projections right back to it. So ego is whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's excellent. Okay.
Good. And you can talk to the mentor about it.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's where that will work in recording and listening. I just felt so stuck even there.
Mm-hmm.
Mentor. I'm writing. I know, yeah. I can listen to this again, but I'm still writing it down. Okay.
So here's the other thing that you want to do. I think you want to do. Write some stuff down, make some recordings of all of his great qualities, the things that you value most about him, what you appreciate, how he's different from people who have made you very unhappy in the past, what he brings to this relationship, all of that, so that's what you're really focused on. Because when that force is out of your mind, when you're no longer indulging that element of conditioned mind, then you're going to begin to see how really attractive he is, how beautiful he is. From what you've described, he certainly is beautiful on the inside, and you're going to start seeing that reflected outward.
Oh, that sounds really great. I hope so, and I'll do everything.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you are so welcome. Great to talk with you. Take care. Have fun.
Yeah, Gesho. Thank you.
Gesho.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Holly. That was a fun conversation, Sherry.
Yeah. We just, you know, it's good to see the structure, right? And
yes.
And then to, that's again about the email class. That's what I'm excited about with that email class, is another opportunity to see how the same structures work regardless of the content.
Yes.
Right? So it doesn't matter whether it's really charged content or fairly innocuous content. The structures are the same. The process is the same. It's good to see that. So, yeah, that was a great how it works exploration.
Yes, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And we have another call here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. It's Sri Devi in Philadelphia.
Well, hello, Sri Devi. Uh-huh. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
I need or I'm looking for some guidance around a particular piece of content that I am keep going up in my head to, which obviously is not very helpful, and just not quite sure how to proceed with considering it. And it's the content has to do around whether or not I want to try to have a child with my partner. And it's been very interesting to watch, because for most of my life I've had no energy around having a child or not having a child, or trying to, because I can't control whether or not I have one, so it's more around trying to. And I've always thought it would probably be based on who I would end up with. I've never had I'm going to have a child no matter what. If I'm single, I'm going to adopt or something else. And so about a year ago, I met someone, a single divorced father who has two sons. And as we proceed in our relationship and have gotten closer, I have realized lately that, yeah, I think it'd be really wonderful to have the experience of having a child with this man. And he is at a place where he's not sure and imagines that, has a hard time imagining it based on, I think, you know, the fact that he already has two sons, based on his age, his financial situation, and some other factors. So I'm not quite sure how to proceed with it, because, you know, there was for a moment I thought, okay, well, should I go find someone who wants to have a kid? And I thought, well, that doesn't really make sense to me. That doesn't make any sense at all. And then there was a part of me that thought, well, maybe I should just be on my own then, because this past weekend when he started sharing that he was starting to see it as a harder and harder possibility for him, I felt so sad all weekend long. The feeling was, oh, my God, I can't be sad throughout this entire relationship. This will be too hard. So I just I'd rather be on my own than be in the relationship and be sad. And so I'm not quite sure how to proceed in that consideration, and I have been doing, recording, and, oh, yes, sorry.
No, that's okay, but I just saw something in what you said that to me is really an important thing to consider. So you have not had any particular interest in having a child, and it was something that you would look at when you were in a relationship where that was sort of a natural thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it occurred to you, oh, well, you know, it might be nice to have a child with this fellow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How old are your kids, by the way?
11 and 6.
11 and 6. Okay. You know, that might be a nice thing. And then when he said, I don't think so. Suddenly, having a child is really important.
Hmm. Yeah.
In fact, it became so important that the two choices you have are being in this relationship sad or leaving the relationship.
Yeah.
Is that, when I reflect it back to you, is that kind of interesting to you?
Yeah. And what's so interesting about that is I was, you know, I just felt myself go into this depression about it. I got so sad and I was, you know, started the curling up in the ball in the dark room kind of thing. And I went, oh, no. I went to practice. I was like, get the body moving. And I went to yoga. And what dropped in as I was just trying to be where I was is what's going on here, that not necessarily about this child, but is it around that I think that there's some kind of experience I'm looking for with him if we have a child, that if we don't have that experience, I'm going to be missing something? Because I thought, I'm like, it's actually not about the child, because if I had this burning desire to have a child, it wouldn't matter. Like, this would have been resolved the day I met him. I would have said I wanted a child, or I wouldn't, that's where I'm starting. I'm like, what is this really about? Like, what's really going on here? You know,
yeah. I think that's a really good question. I think you're asking the key question. Because what it sounds like, first of all, at the risk of, offending. Some woman had that experience with him,
mm-hmm.
and now they're no longer together.
Yeah.
So very often, of course, when we look around, we see that that is the experience people have,
mm-hmm.
right? They get together, they have a child, a couple of kids, whatever number of kids, and then they're no longer together. So I just think that's an important thing to keep in mind, you know, when we look at all the permutations. Because if the experience you want to have is having a child, that's one consideration. If it's having a child with this man, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's having a family with this man, that's another thing, right? And there...
Mm-hmm.
They're actually perhaps very different issues.
Yeah.
And yet when they get rolled in together, the thing that seems to be key to this is everything was fine until he said he didn't think that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He was great. Yeah. The two of you were great. You were happy.
Yeah. And then this just, you sound a spiral. And,
mm-hmm.
and what's interesting is if he said, let's have a child right now, I'd be like, oh no. Like, I'm not in a position where I'm ready to have one. It's more like, let's see where we are in 2 years and how we are. And there's, I think, a part of me that goes, I think I just want the possibility to explore it. And there's
mm-hmm.
also the truth of we could try to have a child and that may never happen, you know, but by mm-hmm. so many things that happen. And so and so I'm not at that, well, if we try and it doesn't happen, we'll do adoption and a bunch of other things. I'm like, I don't have that energy behind it. But there was just something about feeling like it wasn't a possibility anymore that really just felt crushing to me.
Yes. And because you're a practitioner, I'm going to suggest this. It's a great way to ruin a good time. That what a perfect opening for self-hate, egocentric karmic conditioning, to jump in there and make a problem where there isn't one and create suffering where there's really no reason to suffer.
Because in a
couple of years, you don't know where either one of you will be. In a couple of years, you might be sitting across the breakfast table, look at each other and go, let's see if we can have a baby. In 2 years, you may have decided you don't want to be together any longer. Right?
So, yeah, absolutely.
But a story in the head will take us out into the future, create a problem that does not exist, and then try to flush our lives down the toilet as a result of it.
Yeah.
To take you from being happy with this man in this relationship right now to, I need to be alone.
Yeah. Or, because I can't, because the story was, I need to be alone because I couldn't handle the sadness of it all, which I watched that happen and went, well, because the conditioning wants to tell me I'm just going to be sad all the time with him. All the time.
Right.
And I just, having practiced for a while, I was like, I know that's not true. Because I've been there and said that story. And that's not true because I know that my happiness doesn't exist based on content. I've had the experience of that being true, that happiness exists outside of content. So I know I'm not going to be sad forever in that story. But it's just really interesting to sit down and reflect. Is there something around, because I know I can't guarantee him anything. Like, there's no guarantees in life. So he could sit down right near, tell me I'm super open to having a child, and in 2 years say, yeah, I'm not anymore. You know, and what changed,
Exactly.
So then I go, what's happening, I guess, is like, is there just someone who just needs to know something? Like, she just, because I feel that, she just needs to know it's a possibility. And why, though? Why does she need to know it? Why?
I'm thinking it's not a she. I think it's karmic conditioning.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because, simply because it was not an issue. And then it's so the way it works, right? So, there could be 1,000 things, right? That years ago, this woman told a story about she went into a store to get something, and she saw something else in the store, something that she didn't know existed when she walked into the store, and she watched herself within about 30 seconds feel like her life depended upon her having this thing. It's such a karmic conditioning story, right? So knowing all of those things, I mean, if we're going to talk about you have to know there's a possibility, well, then say, yeah, there's a possibility, just in the same way that we just said. You know, in a year, he might say, I've changed my mind. You know, I got 2 sons, I want a daughter. Let's go. And you're not ready. So is there a possibility? There are tons of possibilities. You know, you walk into the grocery store tomorrow and suddenly you see one another across a crowded grocery store and you realize, oh my God, I've been completely deluded. I thought I was happy in this relationship, but now I've just found the love of my life. We don't know. Any and everything is possible, but our having a karmic image of it is not the same as having possibility.
So then how do I, because what's interesting is as I'm listening, I can hear the screaming in my head. You know, when you're saying maybe PKC, I can feel, you know, the karma going, no, it's not. It's really you. And I'm going, that's a really good clue.
There's
right
a big clue, huh?
So then as all this energy shows up and as, like, you know, I'm trying to stay out of my head because I know there's, and trying not to work on quote-unquote figuring it out because, you know, what, I can just kind of go, what do I do? I mean, and I, what actually dropped in.
Go ahead. Oh, something dropped in. Okay, good.
I was just going to say, you know, as soon as I said, I was like, well, you sit and you record and listen and you just do the practice and you keep just seeing what, you watch what happens. But there's this energy of another energy that I go, what do I do with that energy?
Okay, so here's the deal. That what do I do about it energy is the same force because it's got to keep trying to make it a problem. So now there's this problem. Now you've realized, well, maybe it's not a problem. Well, but what do I do? What do I do? There, now we're back. We've got another problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I do under these circumstances is simply to say, to watch it. This would be true for Holly, too, with that stuff that's going on in her relationship, is to say, wow, your ego. Your ego. That's really interesting. I see what you're doing. So the conversation is, and you talk through your experience of what's happening to you. And you name it. Wow, you are ego. Wow, you are self-hate. That's what's talking to me right now. That's self-hate. I see. Wow. Can you picture it? Yeah, because when it's in there saying, oh my God, well, what do I do? Now it's you, right? It's got you. It's, once again, it's got you to identify with it. Okay? And so just to name it, because you've been practicing long enough to know it's not you, right?
Yeah.
It's, as you say, this is content. Happiness is based in the process that we're doing. So you know what that is that's operating. So just name it. What's screaming in there? What's screaming? Yeah. No, this is really, oh, wow. That's what ego sounds like when it's not getting its way.
Mm.
Wow. That's impressive.
And then the person who showed up this weekend who was just sad at the idea that it may never happen, is that, I mean, it felt like it was an aspect of my personality, probably responding to ego, you know, when it's storming. Do I just sit and mentor her? Because if she's believing, I don't know if she's believing a story. She's obviously listening to ego. And because that, I move into that identification place with her, and then the overwhelm and the depression starts because it feels like I'm never going to disidentify from her.
Yeah.
How do I get her?
Well, I'll tell you true. I don't believe it's a her.
Okay.
I don't. I think it's identification. I think it's identity. I think it's ego. But just to be sure, take a shot at bringing her into conscious, compassionate awareness. You know, just to basically, now, if it's an aspect of you, that aspect of you has been listening to this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's a conversation that you would want to have with any aspect of you that is concerned about particular content. You know, the conversation is along the lines of, you know, we can't know. We don't know what the future is going to hold. We don't know how we're going to feel this afternoon, let alone how we're going to feel in a year or 2 years or 5 years. So there's the only thing to do is be present and trust life and know that whatever is for us in this life, we'll have. What isn't, we won't. There's no reason to worry about it. So let's just... and then get on with whatever you're doing in your life. If there's agreement with that, okay, then you know you're talking to an aspect of yourself who just wants your attention to be embraced in acceptance, to be comforted and included. if there's resistance, if there's clinging to sadness, sliding into depression, a story, it's not an aspect.
Okay. At any conversation about where will we be 2 years from now, or if he still doesn't agree 2 years from now, you're going to be so, I could just hear, I just heard it, you're going to be so sad. Okay. It's all ego.
That's right.
Stay away from
there
that.
There it is.
Stay away from it.
Yep.
It's about where I am in this moment and focusing on that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And a voice that says, you're going to be so sad, has really given themselves away.
Yep. I totally just heard it. Yep.
Yeah, good.
All right.
Good.
Well,
all right.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Oh,
all right. And I'm going to be seeing you in Pennsylvania in about a month. Month and a half.
Oh, excellent.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'll look forward to it.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, we're going to break now and hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
This year's theme is training to live in this here now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services, under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Paula in South Carolina.
Well, hello, Paula. How are you?
Well, I'm really good, and I'm looking at a process and with a great deal of curiosity. I'm really relating to what you've just said to the previous two callers. It seems like that's the guidance I also needed to hear. But what I'm looking at is I'm getting ready to do I'm taking on a new project, and what I'm looking at is adequacy and inadequacy. And so there's this kind of feeling in the heart, with the heartbeat, you know, like picks up, and I feel this sort of sense of, oh my God, you are not up to the task. So
says who? That's what we're wondering.
Yeah. There's mixed emotions that I get excited about this, because there's also something about this whole process that feels like I've come up against something that's been a part of this human's life for as far back as I can remember. And I'm about to break through something, but I need help.
Yeah. So I bet you've nailed that one, don't you?
Something's about to happen.
Yeah. Which is why you're being told you're not equal to the task. Right?
Yes. And one of the interesting things that I've noticed as well is there is a, or identified, I guess, is that there is an aspect of, and I'm not sure if this is an aspect of, ego or if it's really, but there's some part of me that really gets pushed and feels a tremendous amount of pressure. And when this emotion of inadequacy arises, that's how I end up responding to it. Like, oh my God, you need to reread all these, you need to reread all these books. You need to memorize all these things. You've forgotten, there's this whole litany of things that kind of set me up to feel tremendous internal pressure and to really feel pushed, and that it's just not possible for me to get all these things done that I need to get done in order to be ready for this project, and on and on.
And Paula, can you just, without going up into your head to get a conditioned mind answer, can you recall when this kind of thing started for you in your life?
Well, I think
this feeling
probably. I mean, I think it may have started as early as, I don't know, even 4 or 5 or something. It feels really young. It feels like, there's a part when I was doing some recording, I realized that the aspect that feels like she can't handle it is very, very young. And, it's not the part that needs to be handling it.
That's right. Yeah. When you were describing it, I felt the place where I can remember feeling that was the first time book reports were introduced. Okay? So I have to read this book and stand up in front of the class and report on it. Okay? It gets my vote for the greatest destroyer of children's desire to learn of anything in our educational system. But be that as it may. And so there's that same feeling then, now you're in kindergarten, or you've gone to first grade, and it's completely overwhelming. There's just no way I can ever get this together and keep it together. And then that feeling is, it just gets compounded with every stage of development, where we're asked to do more and more complex things, and we're still, here's the point of it. We don't have any more support than we did when we set out for kindergarten or preschool or whatever the heck it was. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So from an adult perspective, it's not that big a deal, and you're fine, and you just, you'll be fine. I mean, millions of kids have gone through this, and they've all survived, and you're going to, too. Okay, it's kindergarten, for heaven's sake, right? But for the one going through it, that's not the experience at all. And so there isn't the help. There isn't the support. Everybody knows you shouldn't be crying. It's a big crybaby or whatever it is that's going on. So here we are now with an opportunity to address that, because you're right. Somebody that emotionally young shouldn't be doing big projects, big adult projects.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yes. And that's what I was looking at is how to best support the human who is excited and enthusiastic about this project, and really take care of her, and at the same time, stay centered in some, and maybe this is coming from my head, but, at a level of maturity that knows that, Life is going
it's
to take
okay.
care of it. It's not up to me. Yeah.
That's right. It's going to be okay. Whatever it is, probably is not going to require reading every book you've ever read. So to me, it's the, you know, it's basic child care. Okay, so and we can act this out in what in you know to whatever degree you're willing to act it out. All right, so there is this very young person emotionally who gets frightened by stories of how hard this is going to be and how overwhelming and how impossible and how she can't do it and that sort of thing. So we don't want her there for any of this, right? She gets to stay in some place in the house where she's happy and secure and safe, and then you, conscious compassion awareness, a practitioner with a mentor, you go about doing the activity, and you make a really sharp distinction between those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, and
so you're the parent. You're the parent. You're not going to take this little child to work or to any of the other places in your life where little children don't belong.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I just, I'm getting clearer and clearer about that, and it's helpful to hear it from another person because I really was, I don't know.
It gets
mushed
together in our heads.
Yeah. Say that again, Sherry. I'm sorry. I missed that.
It gets mushed together when it stays inside our own head. Yeah. You know, the characters and the interactions and the dialogue are not as clear when they're inside our head because we're so used to believing the stories. You know,
yeah.
I'm feeling really frightened. I'm feeling really anxious. I'm being told that I need to do all of this stuff. I don't see how I'm going to be able to do it. Okay, and the adrenaline is pumping and the heart is going and the, you know, but when we start taking it apart, we okay, well, this is this, that's that, and that goes over there, and this is here, then we can see, okay, right, I got it. And then
yeah.
the trick, of course, is the work is to stay in that place, right? Which is why we practice, so that we can stay in that disidentified place that can say, okay, that's the conversation that gets everybody really upset, so we're not indulging that conversation. Right? We're going to spend time mentoring, supporting, encouraging aspects of the personality who get afraid. If they don't want to be mentored or embraced or understood or any of that, then we know it's egocentric, karmic conditioning, self-hate, and we don't give it any attention.
Yeah. I really, I think that's, I do get that. I do, I think that that's kind of where I am in terms of looking at and these emotions and seeing the sort of the fine difference between you know who's getting pushed around.
Yes.
And because that person, I mean that the feelings of pressure and tension and inadequacy, it's the pushing is coming from ego, I think.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
It seems like that's, you know, that's, and
yes.
So there isn't really no aspect of myself that's a pusher. That's
no.
what's gotten through to me. I used to always think that I am a pusher. I push. And that's where the breakthrough, I feel like, is really beginning to, and that's what I'm looking for to get some clarity, is that I'm not the pusher.
That's right.
You know, ego's the pusher.
And
that's
right.
Just some young part of me that gets parts of me that get pushed around by ego.
Yes. Yes. Now, again, the subtle practice place is if it's a young part of you, then it wants to get out of the situation.
Yes.
Okay, that's the place where people get confused about what's an aspect of the personality and what's karmic conditioning. So if it's somebody, a young person who feels overwhelmed and anxious and no matter what you do, they won't get out of the conversation, then you're dealing with ego talking to ego.
Yeah,
and that's when we just say, okay, that's all ego. We're not doing that. we're not doing that anymore. I'm going to stay focused on, and you come back to a conversation with the mentor about, okay, I'm getting ready to do this thing. What's the best way for me to prepare? And the mentor is probably going to say something like, well, breathe and be present.
Well, that's exactly what the mentor said, yes. That is exactly it. And I hear that. I keep coming back to that. Okay, well, let me let you go. Thanks so much.
You are so welcome. You are prepared.
We shall see.
Thanks, Paula.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
You too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Paula. Sherry, we're about 4 minutes to the hour here.
Oh, my goodness. Really? Already? Wow.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Would you like to take another caller, or should we call it a night?
You know, what the heck. Let's try it. It could be Susan.
Okay, next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes.
This is Anne from England.
Well, hello, Anne. Oh, I'm so glad we decided to do this. How are you?
You know what? It's like having my bingo number come up. I was like, is it going to come up? Is it not? So I can say bingo.
Yeah, bingo. Got up in the middle of the night, and now you get to yell bingo.
Yeah. And I've got, I've had a really, really, really tough day, so I'm really glad you stayed on. Because I've had ego and a battering ram at me all day.
Mm.
And it's not all been terrible, because I've fought back just as hard. And kind of by the end of the day, definitely by the end of the day, I kind of felt like I'd come through something big.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you came through something big, feeling good about your efforts to come through it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Fought the good fight.
I fought the good fight, and my reward is to ring in tonight and just to kind of not hide and to just kind of say that it was battle well fought. And what helped me a lot through the day was I decided to do something really physical the last couple of days. I decided to build a pond and listen to the archives at the same time, just to kind of not be in my head all the time and just kind of do something physical and listen to the archives and kind of see what came through the shows to get support in that way.
Mm-hmm. How lovely.
Yeah, so it was something positive while I was struggling, and it kind of, that energy that comes up, I think it was that lady with that beautiful name, is it not Desiree, Sridevi. Sridevi,
yes.
Sridevi, I love that name. I've heard her on the archive so many times. I just love that name. She said something about energy, about the energy that comes up when conditioning is really getting to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, normally I will run or do some exercise, and that helps, but it felt like it was much stronger than that. So I needed to do something really, really physical to kind of stay with it.
Yes, and that is so important to have that energy for you.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of trying to dissipate it, trying to get away from it, you use the energy and had it for you.
Yeah.
That's really important. Yeah. And have you done some recording to let this woman know how pleased you are, how happy and proud you are of the work and the effort and the willingness and tenacity and all of those kinds of things?
I haven't done any recording about it this evening, because what I did do was I rang Anna and I asked Anna to be my, they didn't say be my reflective listening buddy, but we kind of got into that relationship on the call, and that really helped. Mm-hmm. That really shifted massively, because it felt like I got a lot of compassion from someone that I wasn't giving myself. So I needed to hear, and you know, it would be a good thing to get the mentor to do that, and I will do, but sometimes I feel like I need to hear it from someone else also. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really helpful, because I could feel a huge change in energy afterwards and a really positive.
Yeah.
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 That makes sense?
Yeah. Oh, it does. And it's such a confidence builder. You know, with practice, one of the things that we all struggle with is the, you know, what Paula was talking about it most clearly, the anxiety, the overwhelm, there's going to be something that comes along here, and I'm not going to be up for it. I'm not going to be able to face it. It's going to be bigger than I am, and I'm going to go under. And when we come through something like what you're describing, like the day you had today, and you come through it, and yeah, it's hard, and yes, it's a struggle, and no, it's not fun, but you make your way through it, and you choose being present, you choose practice, you choose the human being, and you come out the other side of it so much stronger, and the confidence just builds.
Thank you for that, because I think that's I needed to hear that I'm on the right track, because I think very briefly what it started all around was me doing something that I don't normally do, which was staying present and not I've just stopped work, and I told you a few weeks ago my sister wasn't very well, and it's just been really difficult to say. I've helped her to in the way that I can at the moment, but I felt I've needed a bit of time to just be there for myself, and it was real. I can see now that that's part of the problem, that the struggle was where it was, even though I could have, you know, we say that it's not about the story, but sometimes it's important to look at why I was feeling that way, so I can go through that process of understanding. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Because it felt like I didn't know why I was like this, but then it suddenly dropped into me that was why I was like that. I don't know if I'm explaining myself.
Yes. No. Yeah. Because you're present. You're present with yourself. You're present with the person who's having the experience, and the clarity is there. And when the clarity is there, there's also increased willingness and strength and commitment and all perseverance, all of those things that we need in order to fight the good fight, you know, to stay with it until we can come out the other side, knowing that we're stronger, knowing that we made it, not washed up on the shore somewhere, but really came through it conscious, eyes wide open, I made it.
That's what it feels like, exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, that's great. That's very good. Well, I'm glad this worked out. I'm glad we got to speak tonight.
Yes. And before you go, can I give one shout out for the African Vulnerable Children Project? Because I've not heard anyone talk about it for a little while, and I mentioned a few weeks ago that I was doing a project in school with the kids, and I just wanted to say that it was really successful, and not in the way conditioning would say it was successful, and that I got loads of money. It was just the whole process was brilliant. And I learned,
oh, good.
You know, it was an invaluable experience. And maybe I'm going to blog about it. I've kept recordings about it, and I am going to blog about it to share. Because it's
lovely.
You know, so
lovely. And I was just this afternoon, I was looking at something that's going to come out, because the program is getting ready to launch. You know, we're getting ready to start our the big campaign for the fall. So
yeah,
timing is good.
Yeah, I thought it would be a good opportunity to mention that. And yeah, and I just wanted to, I know Anna will hear this tomorrow. I want to say a big thank you to Anna for, and thank you to the whole Sangha, because I feel really, really supported. And that's made me really promise to myself I'm going to ring in more often, because the radio shows just, you know.
Yeah.
Been invaluable.
Because we got to stick together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And all one thing before I go, just to make you laugh, I've signed up for Zen Awareness Coaching. And I'm going to start this week, because I think it will be another good support. And I put in the word gas. I signed up as Gasso, and unfortunately it came up as Grasshopper, but it was too late to change it because I'd sent the button. So
yes, that autofill is a bad idea, isn't it? So we'll look for a Zen Awareness Coach for Grasshopper. How's that?
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Well, you keep taking good care of yourself, okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the call. And thank you, Michael. And good night to you both.
Good night.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. And wow.
Good call, huh?
Fabulous.
All right.
Fabulous.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Good night.